Together we will stand, fight until fall. Come on now, people.
Good morning, and welcome to Neighbors on KUMD, a community conversation couple days a week at this time, giving us an opportunity to share some collective wisdom and little conversation about the challenges that we are facing at this interesting time in our history. Ah, before I forget, though, today's weather, supported in part by the Ski Hut, now celebrating 64 years of serving the Northland's bicycle, kayak, and stand-up paddleboard needs. Joining us this morning on the phone is a gal that I am pleased to call friend. She's a mom, she's a gardener, she's a KUMD listener, and she's been a regular guest on the show at one point or another. But one of the things I like best about Carol Andrews is how interested she is in the world around her and the way she is just bubbling over with questions all the time. If the unexamined life is not worth living, Carol's got the most worthwhile life there is. Howdy there, Sunshine. Good morning.
Good morning, Lisa. Nice to hear from you.
So you were wondering about your children, and I think a lot of parents are probably struggling. I worried about my child who is in college and she's away from home, and I've got a thing or two to say or weigh in about. Of course, I've never asked, but I would have some opinions about how she's spending her time. And you were wondering, as we were talking, about structuring their time at home, because this is kind of different than maybe the expectations that parents would put on kids during, like, a summer vacation, for example. Talk about some of the things that you've been kind of pondering as we're moving through this interesting time, and now we've got at least another month of it to come.
Sure. I have two kids at home, 17-year-old twins, and what I've been, I guess, struggling with is what should they be doing? And to cut to the punch, what I've realized is what they should be doing is what they need to do to get through this difficult time. And that's a different path for everybody. And that quarantine time might not be the right time for forcing things.
When you're talking about wondering what they should be doing, it sounds as though you maybe had, before you thought it through completely, you maybe had some ideas about the kinds of things they should be doing. And you were thinking maybe more chores, more reading, more what?
Yep, all of the above. And it's a classic example, too, of social media allowing you to see comparisons and see, you know, what everybody else is doing. Their kids maybe are sewing masks or doing great artwork on the sidewalk and things like that. And you think, well, maybe we should do that. But lesson learned that, our friend Shannon pointed out is the evils of comparison is don't go there. We're all individuals. And so, for example, my kids are very nocturnal. They have been since before they were born. I didn't sleep at night the last 6 weeks I was pregnant, literally. So they're napped now that they do not have to be up to be to school, because I wasn't sure with the distance learning whether or not they'd need to, you know, do like some kids are doing where there's a scheduled Zoom class or things like that. But so far, at least for the high school, it's email and do this and do that. Well, you can do that at 2 a.m. And if that's their natural time, which I'm a night owl too, you know, so they're up late. Well, should I make them go to bed earlier? So that's kind of been finding the happy medium there. And I'll tell you, though, there is some upsides. They're sleeping now.
Nice.
The upside is when you have four people, you know, stuck in the house together, maybe it's not all bad to have different schedules, because they don't want to see me all the time either. So anyway, I've kind of concluded that I'm thankful that they have been shown an amazing level of understanding and acceptance of the situation. You know, it's not that nobody's ever sad or a little frustrated, but I have to give them credit for being very patient with the situation, given that their life as they know it, you know, your life as a teen is your friends, your school, your plays, your activities, things like that. And that has been taken away other than what they can access through the screen
now,
for the most part.
Carol, when you and I were kids and summer vacation came around and maybe we had to go away. I know in my family, we went up to the lake, and sometimes I was allowed to bring a friend, and sometimes that meant that I was away from my friends. And there was no phone at the lake. There were no, you know, cell phones, of course, at the time. There were no screens. We wrote letters back and forth. Are you finding that because kids have so many easy, convenient ways to stay connected that they're not suffering perhaps through this the way you and I might have if we, you know, of course we would have just spent hours on the phone hanging up the phone line, the only phone line, but are they adjusting in a sense a little bit better because they're maybe used to accessing one another through screens more than you and I would have been?
I can only guess yes, yeah, that's definitely helped. That makes it easier than what we would have gone through, but and that's where, again, it's comparing what I think, well, if I had this much time in our day, like you're saying, we would have also been doing a lot of reading or things like that. So how you make use of the time, and is time spent looking at a screen necessarily always invaluable? I think that's not of value. I think that's something that I jump to incorrectly sometimes. I told my daughter, what have you been on the screen all day? And then I realized, well, she was using the college search engine. Okay, that's probably good, because this is spring break. We would have been touring colleges this week. So, there's a lot of watching funny, goofy videos and who knows what else. I try to keep track of it, but it's not all bad, that's for sure.
It is. It definitely is interesting, and I think we can also observe some of those generational things, because our parents, well, my parents anyway, would have had no problem at all assigning me chores and my sister and saying, you have some additional time here and you're part of this family, get going. And I think that, there are some parents that parent that way, but then there are, I think it's not quite the authoritarian parenting style anymore that perhaps we grew up with.
Yeah, that's where it gets to. I think if it was, like you said, if it was, there'd be a lot more of an inclination for me to crack down. Then this is just uncharted territory. And now with the extension yesterday for another 3 days, you know, where soccer practice has become, at best, you know, working with mom throwing the ball, that's not very fun compared to actually, you know, being at the my son should be at a college showcase tournament again this weekend. That they're missing out on a lot. So how much slack do you give them? I don't know. Probably not as much as I do, but that's what I'm struggling with. And that's where I have ideas for other folks to call in and give advice on that are professionals. I'm Josephine Average. Remember, I told you that. That's my role here.
As I said at the beginning, one of the things that I love about the way you operate is that you do ask so many questions, because you really are always wondering what's really going on here. How can I do it better? Do I need to do it better? And I just think that's a fascinating way to be. Carol, thank you so much this morning for joining us and sharing your questions. And we'll absolutely connect. We'll get some of these folks that you're recommending on the air with us so we can find out what they've got to say. And our next guest is going to have some information to share that may also be kind of useful. Dr. Julie Slowiak is an assistant professor at the UMD Department of Psychology, and she's an expert in self-care and well-being. So that schmooze coming up in a moment. Thanks again, Carol.
All right, have a good one.
You're all I need to get by. As long as you got me, then baby, you know that you got me. You're all I need.
So what do you need to get by as we're living through these challenging times? I need books, four-leggeds, coffee, and chocolate. I have all of those things for the most part, so I'm in fairly good shape. But different people need different things. Dr. Julie Slowiak, as I mentioned, is an assistant professor in the UMD Department of Psychology. She's an expert in self-care and well-being, and she knows a thing or two about working remotely and how to make that work. So we've got her on to share some information with us this morning. Hey, Julie, good morning. Good to have you.
Good morning, Lisa. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, I don't know if you're as addicted to coffee and chocolate as I am, but I know that your hurricane is a great part of how you just navigate life, period, is having a good four-legged companion at your side.
He sure is. After I have my morning coffee, and I probably have three morning coffees, so I'm definitely a coffee lover just like yourself. But in between coffees, he gets me up and off my butt from working and out for walks and fresh air. So, or if I'm feeling a little bit of anxiety, all I got to do is start petting him. And he has the softest ears that I've ever, experienced with a dog. And so I can just sit there and pet him and feel that sense of calm just running through me.
You know, I laugh because it's very true. There's been a lot of studies about the importance of companion animals and the mm-hmm. and how they are so good for you. Yesterday, in the middle of the Zoom meeting, my roommate came home, and all the four-leggeds are really excited about that. This engenders a lot of barking from the half palm. And one of the Chihuahuas has decided that when he comes home, she's going to scream with happiness. Not bark, but scream. And so this is going on in the other room, and I'm thinking, this is relaxing as my blood pressure is going through the roof. All right. So short of eliminating the screaming animals from your environment, Julie, talk about some ways that, because you've identified a number of comparatively easy steps to make the whole working at home thing work better for people. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I guess I was, if you can call it lucky, I was lucky enough to work remotely last fall. And so the transition to working remotely again this spring semester, I thought, I have some information that I can share just based on that experience and based on the literature on remote work. And one of the first things that I've recommended to colleagues and to my undergraduate and graduate students is really figuring out ways that they can create some structure where all of a sudden structure is lacking. And how I've come to describe this is sort of identifying some anchors during the day. Ideally, there's an anchor that you have in the morning. So for me, it's enjoying that cup of coffee, doing a little bit of meditation in the middle of the day. One of my anchors is getting outside for a quick brisk walk with the dog, and then some kind of evening anchor so that throughout the day, even though you might have to be flexible take on whatever comes your way, you do have some anchors throughout the day to give you that sense of structure.
Julia, let me ask you, because Carol mentioned this just a moment ago as she was talking about her kids, and she talked about, of course, the fact that they're night owls. But she said because of the way their distance learning is structured for the older kids, they're 17, it's emails and get this stuff done. So they can pretty much work at whatever time. Now, even for me, when I'm on vacation, I don't know what's the matter with me. I don't get up at 4:30 every morning. So I enjoy being a slug, but too much of that is too much of that makes you start to feel kind of yuck. What is the importance of establishing structure and routine? What does that do for us psychologically?
Oof, I can't tell you exactly what it's doing, psychologically, but, if you think about just our, from a behavioral perspective, we're trying to create those habits and those routines, and it just makes it easier so that when things are chaotic, like they are and unpredictable, there is that sense of normality that we can kind of come back to. And one of the things that I've, really worked hard over the years is not to let my weekday routine go away once the weekend comes. And for me personally, you know, that has been really helpful. So trying to, you know, wake up at relatively the same time on the weekends or even on vacation, and keep those things that are part of my normal routine, or at least those things that are really important to me, like coffee and, you know, walks with the dog.
Yep.
Keep those things with me, because then, you know, they almost provide a source of comfort when everything else seems really uncertain.
I like the idea, too, that if you have a routine, you can maybe be a little more confident that things aren't slipping through the cracks. There has been a sense for me lately, and I think for many other people, of this kind of free fall right now, where they're, what's going on? And you start thinking about all of the stuff that should be done that isn't getting done because you don't remember it because you're not where you need to be, or it's at work, or it's on a different computer. And so regaining that, I think, is a really valuable thing also. I love the idea of that is one of the other suggestions that you make, of setting up an effective workspace. And I think a part of that, too, is possibly a pleasant workspace that you want to hang out in and do stuff. Talk about that a little bit.
I can certainly relate to that one in a number of different ways. You know, one of the things that I realized early on when I started my position at UMD is that my office was so bleak and barren, and I really like color. And so, you know, with the help of a colleague of mine, we spruced up my office, and I brought in, you know, pictures of, you know, myself engaging in activities that I enjoyed, such as hiking, traveling, working out, as well as, you know, pictures of my friends and loved ones, and of course, hurricanes, you know. And so trying to figure out, you know, a space in your new workspace that you can, you know, bring some of those things that are comforting to you, so that when you go down and you sit down to work, also, you know, it reminds you of, you know, the things that are important to you. A really good example one of my graduate students shared is that, you know, this student had to move from their Duluth home to back to their family home. And so the student positioned a desk in front of a window so that it would simulate his workspace in his Duluth home. And I thought, oh, that's a really great example of how to create an effective workspace for you. And another, you know, thing with setting up that workspace is, you know, setting those boundaries and saying, okay, this is work time, only interrupt me if. And especially, you know, when there are others living in the home with you at this time while you're trying to work. So as much as you can do that, you know, have some way of signaling to others that now I'm in work mode, and maybe it's even a couple of different signs. Like one is like, do not interrupt me. I'm in a very important meeting. Only interrupt me if it's an emergency, or I'm casually working, so feel free to knock and interrupt me during this time.
If you have a cat, none of those things will work. And it's possible that if you have a small child, none of those things will work. But
right.
It is important to teach everybody in your life, regardless of their age to an extent, that sometimes you are not available to them, and they need to entertain themselves. And then shortly you'll take, as you know, which is one of your final tips here. We're going to need to move on to our next conversation here. But one of your final tips, we are, by the way, going to get a link set up to this article because it's got so much great information in it. It's especially some ideas about dealing with anxiety, too, which a lot of people are dealing with. But one of the other things that you mentioned is taking mini breaks throughout the day. And maybe that's a way that you could, for a smaller child, set a timer. An egg timer or something, and say, or a little kitchen timer, and say, when this goes off, then I'm going to come and hang out with you, and we'll, you know, do a little something for a little bit, for, you know, 15 minutes, half an hour, whatever it might be.
Yeah, I don't have a little human being in my home, but I was talking to my sister, and she has been doing some telework herself, and that's one of the things that they do. You know, they tell. They, you know, they're really specific with the kids to say, you know, I'm going to work from this time to this time. Once that time frame ends, we're going to go outside, play in the yard, hang out with the dogs, and do those sorts of things. And another really easy way to take mini breaks, I joked with somebody the other day, I said, I've been keeping up with my laundry better now than I was before all of this happened, because I use, switching the laundry around as a way to take a mini break, to get up and stretch and, go from the top level of my home to the basement. So,
and laundry,
be a little bit of physical activity at the same time.
Laundry, if you're in the middle of a good book or you're in the middle of mm-hmm. a movie, who wants to do laundry? But if you're in the middle of
right.
work, suddenly, yeah, I think I'll get up, I'll do some laundry, I'll empty mm-hmm. the dishwasher. All of these little
exactly.
tasks that are so onerous normally
mm-hmm.
are, oh, yeah. And then when you're done with work, you've managed to do the two things simultaneously.
Exactly.
This
exactly.
is win,
not sitting there at the end of your workday.
Win, Julie. I want to be you when I grow up. That's my plan. Julie, I wish we had more time because you've got so many great ideas, as I mentioned. I'll get a link set up to this article where you lay out a lot of these ideas, because this is great stuff for individuals and families. Maybe you've been working from home for a long time and you think you got it down. There's still great stuff you're going to find here, because this is a kind of a different situation. And if you've never had the experience before, you're going to dive into this mm-hmm. article and really enjoy it. Julie, thanks a gazillion for joining us this morning, and give that hurricane a kiss on his nose, okay?
Will do. Thanks, Lisa.
Dr. Julie Slowiak, our guest this morning here on Neighbors. If you'd like to join in the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 218-726-7181. How are you taking care of yourself during our COVID-19 pandemic?
What would you think if I sang out a tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. I get high.
You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that the music on Neighbors is put together by Chris Harwood, our program director. And boy, does that man have a good ear for just the tunes that we need. My friends are, in large part, found between the covers of books. Angel Dobrow is the co-owner of Zenith City Books, and she knows the importance of books at a time like this. Angel, good morning, and thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
So how come bookstores are not considered essential? I mean, who do we write to? Who do we contact to say,
well,
excuse me?
Okay, so Zenith Bookstore and indie bookstores all across the country have moved a lot of their sales and services online. So you can still get books. We also have brought in a large inventory of puzzles that you can go to our website and order. And there's no, we're obeying the non-essential service rule, because there's no customer contact.
Right.
You order online, you pay online, and it's shipped to your house.
And so it's an opportunity, well, like the takeout thing with restaurants or the curbside pickup thing.
Well,
it's an, no curbside.
Yeah, no curbside.
But it's all online.
It's all online so that people can, people need books during times like this. So we have, and we've kept staff. We're still paying staff to help, make sure that people's orders are processed in a timely manner.
One of the things that I think is super, super helpful about a bookstore, I worked at a bookstore briefly. I spent all my salary, and then some of that turned out into a really lose-lose, or, a kind of a win-lose proposition overall. But one of the things that I think is really fabulous is perhaps people are maybe starting to read or are exploring books, trying to find new authors, things that they would enjoy. And maybe they're not as familiar. Maybe they don't eat, sleep, breathe, live bookstores and bestseller lists and that sort of thing. So talk a little bit about the importance of well-informed bookstore staff to help somebody, not an algorithm, but a human being, to help somebody find some things they might enjoy reading?
Well, that's a really good point. So you can contact us two ways. So there's a staff person at the store. I think they're trying to do from 11 to 4, or maybe it's 11 to 3. So you can call the store. The number is 218-707-1666 and talk to a live person. Or you can send an email, send it to books@zenithbookstore.com to ask a question or to get some recommendations. I I'm a huge reader. Obviously, I have a lot of experience with books. But I did, when this question came up about what to read during shelter in place, I actually realized there are four categories, I think, that people should put their book choices into. The first one is fiction. And you can scour your shelves. You can go online. You can research different authors. But I really think it's important to have a fiction book going, maybe even two, to help you move into a different reality, someone else's reality. The second category, I think, that I've been following is I'm also reading nonfiction. And what I have actually chosen before the virus came to Minnesota, I had actually purchased a copy of a book called America's Forgotten Pandemic, and it's about the influenza crisis pandemic of 1918. Now, I don't recommend that for a lot of people. It's a super helpful, well-written book, but it is about kind of the current conditions and how things played out in 1918. But anything nonfiction, a history book or the third category I call are how-to books, which are also nonfiction. And I think that people can, if they have the time and the brain space, they can use this time to learn a new skill or read a book about getting a new skill and fantasize about learning it. So that could be knitting, how to make a face mask. The two books I scroll through are, one of them is 40 Knots and How to Tie Them.
I always meant
to learn how to tie knots and kind of never got around to it. And then the other how-to book I flipped through is called Scraps, Wilt, and Weeds. And the subtitle is Turning Wasted Food into Plenty.
Mm.
So it's really kind of a nose-to-tail concept of, how to use the entire, whatever it is you're cooking, whatever food products, fresh food products you're working with, how to use them from beginning to end. And then the fourth category, I realized, is an old favorite.
Oh, what a great idea!
Because if you have an old favorite, when you were reading it, when it became your favorite, you very likely were in a different space. Your life was different. The environment was different. Hopefully you weren't in a shelter-in-place situation. And so reading an old favorite can transport you back to hopefully happier times. And my go-to old favorite right now is a Barbara Kingsolver book called Animal Dreams. It's got to be 30 years old, maybe even more. But I've read it a handful of times, and I absolutely love it. And it's almost like having a blankie or a favorite sweater that you put on to comfort yourself. And you don't, it doesn't take much. You don't have to read the book from beginning to end, your old favorite. Maybe there was a particular chapter or a favorite passage to just help kind of calm the nerves.
And there's something about the familiarity of the words. Yes. My old favorite's even older, or one of my old favorites is even older than yours, because it was written at the, it was written in the 1890s, I want to say, Beautiful Joe. Beautiful Joe, Marshall Saunders. Yeah. Yeah. And that is a heartbreaking and yet a wonderful story. Angel, I love this. This would not have occurred to me because I'm really stuck in a fiction rut. Which I'm really happy there with my chocolate and my coffee and my animals. But this is a fabulous list. I can't wait to implement this. Oh,
yeah.
Gosh, I guess I'm going to have to go online and look at books. Oh, wow, what a drag. Angel, thanks a million for joining us this morning. It was so great to talk to you. Thanks so much for being our guest.
All right. Thanks, Lisa. Have a good day. Bye.
Angel Dobrow, a co-owner of Zenith City Books, our guest this morning on Neighbors here on KUMD. 103.3 KUMD. We're so glad to have you along with us this morning. Neighbors is a feature that we're bringing you Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 to 10:30. Get some folks on talking about how to cope you and live your best life as we do it inside the house. We'll be back on Tuesday with another episode of Neighbors here on KUMD.